Revolting is a production of the Cycling Independent with generous support from our subscribers and with additional underwriting from Shimano North America.
This is Revolting with Steve and Robot on the Cycling Independent, episode 120, the real house husbands of whatever zip code this is.
What's the second word? Content warning? Adjutant. Attention, whatever. Look out, spicy language incoming. Hot topics, consenting adults only past this point. If you're not cool with that, make yourself a Nescafe International Blend and gaze out the window for the next hour. For the sake of full transparency, I just got the notes and I said, all right, I guess I'm going to go in cold. And then sure enough, the second word in the content warning, I don't know how to pronounce. And I said, I guess I'll just do it, you know, like... sight unseen, and Robot said, you gonna raw dog this podcast? Oh, there's the notes. They just arrived. Great. Today is just, I'm so out of sorts. Fuck. Yeah, man.
You do seem a little balled up today.
I am a little balled up. I am really distracted by this upcoming surgical procedure. Mm. And trying to pre-plan all of the things I'm going to need. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what I'm going to need. And I was like, this morning, I was like, okay, well, I gotta pre-freeze a bunch of big ice cubes to put in the recirculating cooler. And I'm going to need a surface on which to put the recirculating cooler. And it's going to be my right knee. So that means I need to like prepare the right side of my bed. So I need to move like bookshelf and the stuff that I have on the left side of my bed to the right side of my bed. I don't know how fucked up I'm going to be. Like, I think I'm going to be off my feet and fully solo for this, through this for, you know, a few days. And it's spooking me. I mean, if I'm being truthful, this is really freaking me out.
No, I get that. Listening to you talk about it just now reminded me of the scene in Trainspotting where he prepares to go through withdrawal. And he's like, one bucket for vomit, bucket for...
I was thinking about that this morning, too. Like, where am I get? Like, if I have an adverse reaction to painkillers, do I what part of my bed do I throw up in? It's just really, I mean, this is fucking grim, dude. Like, it's, I'm kind of kidding, but I'm not. I've not gone through a major surgery before, like totally solo, and I'm really spooked.
Yeah.
Do I just throw up on the floor and, you know, get to it later? So I need, like, this is fucked. This is not rad at all.
Well, I have to believe that there's someone who could help you. Who would even be willing to, because they love you.
Periodically, I mean, a couple people said that they'd like, you know, check in on me. But, you know, like, it's not, this is way more solo than I think I'm emotionally prepared for. So, like, somebody comes in and checks on me, and I've already, you know, literally shit the bed, but I'm just like in it for until somebody shows up in the nighttime or somebody texts me. Yeah, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I don't have I don't know. Yeah, it's just I'm also like, also get real worst case scenario stuff, like trying to check all of the boxes, and then my OCD kicks in and it's probably going to be fine. Everything's probably going to be fine. And I'm just, you know, I'll be there like totally packed into the corner with all my pillows and buckets and like lifelines and stuff. And I won't need any of them.
Right.
But maybe this is sort of a good preliminary exercise because I don't know what the, you know, the follow-up surgery is going to be way gnarlier. This might be, you know, in and out up in a day or two, but I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. I'm trying to be optimistic, but that's not really my nature.
I was going to say, are you though? Because it sounds like you're digging the hole. It sounds like you're like, well, I got the grave dug out back. So that part's done.
Better to have the grave dug out back and not need it.
Yes. That hole will keep.
That's a fucked up thing. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying right now. I am trying right now, but I'm also being pragmatic and potentially realistic.
Well, I think you're being pragmatic, and you're also doing some catastrophic thinking, and you're simultaneously aware that you need to get your shit straight between your two ears before you go off the rails on the crazy train.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot. That's a lot. Those three, that's three major projects, all unto each one to itself.
Mm-hmm. I'm doing a lot of distracting of myself. Like, well, sure, I'll just put this somewhere in my list of tasks. But then also, one of the things on my list of tasks is to ride to the hobby shop and look at remote control trucks. Like, absolute distraction, you know? And sure. But I got to do it because that makes my brain feel better, or I need to, you know, go to my studio and work. I'll deal with taxes eventually, but all of these other things, this is all work. It's all necessary. I just happen to be attracted to the fun tasks, and I continue to ignore the scary, shitty tasks because, you know, adulting is not easy.
I think that is natural. I think your preparation for being laid low should include a remote control truck, probably a BB gun. You might want to start collecting empty beer cans for that purpose. I don't know. You're not getting that. Well, you probably will get the security deposit back. It'd be fun for me to think you're not going to get the security deposit back, but your apartment is actually neat as a pin. And that's a thing that we're going to talk about later in the show.
I don't think I even paid a security deposit, honestly. I don't remember. Every March, my lease comes up for renewal, and I'm like, man, that was another year not spent looking for places to live, which is not true, because I'm constantly looking for places to live, and they all suck 3 to 7 times worse than this place. So, yeah, the cost of living here is, like, through the roof, and even real estate, even, like, places people don't want to live, houses cost $800,000. Mm-hmm. It's great. I'm super hopeful for everything. I did repost the Fall Guy truck recently, and the people who manage the site that has that image, and I don't know if it's like a classic truck broker or it's just classic truck porn or whatever, but they messaged me and they said, we have a plan in the works, or something like that. So I don't know what that means. I think they maybe feel sorry for me. Maybe they started. They started some kind of like crowdsourcing to buy the truck just so they can stop listening to McBellyick about it. I don't know. 2024. It's going to be a big year for me, I think.
I think it is. Well, I mean, if it makes you feel better, I don't know how it's going to make you feel. I was swapping messages with our Southern Hemispheric friend, Zane Jenkinson, yesterday. Zane's up to no good. I mean, let's just put that right out in the open. I hope he's on some riding lawnmower right now, and he like snarfs whatever coffee he's drinking out his nose, as I say. But he's got some nefarious plan in the works. But what I was thinking as I was after I was talking or just have exchanging these little messages with him, I was like, you know what? Steve and I need to come up with some kind of plan where we sell something that is valuable to other human beings. Now, I don't know what that is. If I knew what that was, probably I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. But when we come up with the idea, we will sell this thing and we will use the funds to go to New Zealand together and ride mountain bikes with Zane Jenkinson.
Yeah, wouldn't that be a thing? I still am not totally convinced that he actually exists.
Well, yeah, I buy that. I mean, I could tell you that I have seen him with my eyeballs and hugged him with my gropers. That was weird. Sorry, everyone. I have hugged him. But is that just the person somebody hired to play Zane Jenkinson?
Exactly.
To maintain the charade.
Yeah, there, you touched and talked. You touched a person and talked with the person, but there's still no, you know, there's still no certification, validation, confirmation that he is who he says he is.
Yeah, we would need third-party authentication of the Jenkinson.
Authentication. That was the other education that I neglected to include. Hey, so speaking of like reality is a flat circle or time is a flat circle and this is just a simulation. So there's a few fellas from the Kona Bicycles warehouse who I've met, and every Thursday they go out to this little zone and we play remote control trucks together. It's kind of like a springtime, summertime thing, but we tried to do it last year and it kind of fell apart. This guy, Joey's pissed because every time he'd build a course, he'd like go out to where these tide breaks are and he'd see kids throwing rocks in the water, and he knew that they were fucking with his course. So he's mad at kids like crawling on rocks in the tide break because they're fucking up his. So we're in this other zone now. We were down there last week and there was this cat, and he was on this other section of rocks, and we were talking with him. We said, hey, we're like trying to do like a weekly thing. Maybe you want to come down and meet us. So yesterday he showed up and I took a picture of one of his rigs because it's really bitching. It's just like all custom and brazed bumper and little Volkswagen bug like crawler, and it's super cool. Like I just love it so much. It's so much attention to detail. So this morning on Instagram, I posted a picture that I took of it. It said that I made a friend whose shit is way cooler than my shit. Fucking Ashley Duffus from Cosmic Dirt. She sends me a message and she goes, did you meet my brother? And I was like, what?
What?
And I was like, I don't know. What's his name? And she said, Isaac. You did. I asked. I didn't even know she had a fucking brother. And all of a sudden, now I'm like, I'm friends with her through this whole other realm. And then over here, I meet this new dude and we're like driving trucks together and they happen to be siblings. Is that what? How?
Now,
there's only like 7 people who live in this town. I'm totally convinced of it. They're all related to each other.
Have you seen The Truman Show?
Bits and pieces.
So this is a movie starring James Carey. I believe he goes by Jim, but, and it's about this guy who lives inside a television show and he's not aware that it's a show. He just thinks that's his life.
Right. He was born into this like simulation, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I remember the premise.
So, I mean, in my mind, now I know Ashley, I didn't know she had a brother.
I didn't know she had a brother.
I'm saying 2 weeks ago, she didn't have a brother, but maybe the producers of the show, you know, they're having their meeting and they're like, Steve-o, we need more stimulation for the character. Let's introduce Isaac. He's going to need a really fucking banging remote control vehicle in order to complete this.
Why at any point in the last 3 years, why didn't Ashley say, oh, you know, my brother's really into remote control trucks? Like,
right. Because I don't think he existed. I mean, we're at it, does Ashley exist?
And I don't know, man. I think, no, she, I don't know. I don't know. We're all dead, right?
And we, that's what I was going to say. We're all dead. Let's just go back to.
Did I tell, the story about the car crash I saw a few weeks ago, right? Or like I came upon right after it happened. That blew my mind. A few days later, I was talking with Chad, the guy who like, he's the other dude's, the partner of the guy who got hit. And I overheard him talking to an insurance adjuster or something. I said, you getting shit squared away with the other van? He's like, no, I got hit like 6 days later. I'm like, no shit. What the? And he's like, yeah, they hit and ran me. And then I chased them and I was like trying to get their license plate. And as I was chasing them, they blew through an intersection 3 blocks away from where this other dude got creamed. They blew an intersection and T-boned another car. And it was just a like piece, like huge explosion of cars and car parts. And then the driver and the passenger jumped out and ran. And I'm like, you guys got to get your entire reality like smudged. Burn a bunch of sage on all your vehicles. I don't know what's going on with you guys, but
yeah,
people are tripping. I think that's the only conclusion I can come.
Yeah. To. People are tripping.
People
yeah.
be tripping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Small world. you want to get in on with the shout outs? You got some good ones here.
I'll do some shout outs. So, first I'm going to shout out Connor Burns, for hitting the tip jar at the Cycling Independent. Like he was mad at it. I appreciate that, Connor. In the meantime, since Connor performed his, financial, stunt, to our benefit, I have corresponded with him a little bit. He's a firefighter in Natchez, Mississippi, and also an artist and like, teacher,
and he's a firefighter, and his last name is Burns. Also,
that's a good point. That's a good point. Anyway, Connor is going to be appearing, I believe, at the Cycling Independent. People are going to get to know him a little bit, but cool. he dropped some hot dollars on us, like we did a real nice lap dance for him. So we appreciate Connor. I'm also going to shout out Travis Spuler. Now, Travis communicated to me via some channel that I don't... Like, I read the communication, but it wasn't in a place that I normally receive communications, which is on me. It's probably, like... It was probably, like, Facebook or...
Pornhub.
Could have been a Pornhub direct message. Can you direct message? Is that a thing?
No, I think you just communicate in the comments.
Oh.
Oh. People share recipes and like post skate clips and stuff there. It's really funny. I mean, not
is that
I know.
A fact?
Yeah.
Well,
I don't spend a lot of time there. You know, I'm
Travis anyway. Communicated a pants recommendation, a short pants recommendation. I can't remember. As I said, I don't know where he told me about the pants, but I appreciate him thinking about my pants.
Did you express an issue with?
Yeah.
With your pants,
I was talking about how I do mountainous bicycling in a pair. Like my favorite shorts are a pair of cotton canvas Dickies carpenter pants, but I cut them off. But because of the way the pockets and the hammer loop are, you kind of cut them off at this weird spot. And I was like, I just want them to make the cotton canvas short. And he was like, well, they fucking do.
Oh.
He's like, what? I was like, if someone has a recommendation for where I could get a pair of these canvas, like a pair of good canvas shorts. He's like, yeah, probably like 3 little boxes over on the fucking Dickies site, you moron. He said it a lot nicer than that, but that was basically the gist. He's like, oh, yeah, that company Dickies whose shorts you wear. Turns out they make other things.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah. That was kind of him.
Yeah, that was real nice. And then my last out shouting is a repeat because now Hokum magazine, which you and I both bestowed our genius upon, is for sale.
It exists.
It exists
in real life.
You can get it from Product of Bob Scales.
.com.
Not really. I think it's Product of Bob Scales. I don't know. Just Googlerize Product of Bob Scales and then clickety clack. Give us $10 and read it because it's actually, I think it looks great.
I haven't yet gotten my copies or a copy at all. I've just seen picture of the cover. But the piece that I wrote was sort of a tribute to a thing, to a vehicle. And Chris McNally did the illustrations for it because, you know, of course. And Chris and I have worked together on a lot of projects over the years. And I just think he is one of the best illustrators in the land. He just has this knack for capturing a vibe or an energy or something. I love it. I love his visual output. So I was really excited to collaborate with him again. And I look forward to seeing what else. But it's a bike magazine for people who like other things or something like that. Is that that's how it's billed?
Yeah, that is how it's billed. I think the subtext is it's for people who love bikes who are sick of fucking talking about them. I think that's actually
word.
What? Yeah,
it's about 15 years overdue to get to me, but I'm glad that somebody, you know, executed the notion. My shout out is to Nico and Josh from the band 68. I went and saw them in Seattle a few days ago, and I had not seen them headline before. I've seen them open twice, and it was fucking great both times. But headlining, they have an entirely different energy. Not entirely different energy. They are bigger and louder and more ferocious. And I still don't understand. Like, I send, you know, like, I'm like, anybody, you know, they're playing in Sacramento. And people are like, I don't know if I can go, you know, like, people are missing the fucking boat on these guys. And it's just a matter of time before it, you know, everybody recognizes. But they are just unfucking believable. Like, I've been seeing bands since, like, 1980. Like, properly seeing live music since 1985, I guess, 1986.
Which in America is like four wars ago.
68 is top 10 greatest live acts. They fucking blow my mind. I love the music so much, and their performances are incredible. They just keep getting better.
Yeah, they have this genius for marrying like musical virtuosity to like a sense of humor, to a theatrical kind of, I mean, there's fucking two of them, and yet you're busy watching them. Right?
Yeah. And you're watching Josh, and you're watching him like work this bank of pedals like he knows what he's doing, which he does. Yeah. And then Nico is over here, and you're like, okay, now, but over here, there's this other thing going on. And I don't think I've ever seen any two people operate with such singular vision and synchronicity in the midst of all of this chaos. And what I really love is that, you know, I remember seeing an interview that O did with Ian MacKay years ago, and they were talking about pits, and Ian's like, fuck pits. If you're going to come to a show, fucking dance. Like, 68 is not a slam dance band, yet still any loud amplified guitar music ever since, you know, Lollapalooza, everybody just assumes that you're supposed to, everybody assumes that you're supposed to slam dance. And so their like starts and stops and their breaks and their weird sort of, I understood watching them this time why people in Australia didn't get it, because it's not it's not the Bronx. There isn't, it's not Hey Ho, Let's Go, and it's a punk rock song. It is they morph their songs into other songs, and they have these weird breaks, and so nobody knew when to slam dance. It was great. I just absolutely fucking loved it.
Well, even if you know the songs,
You don't.
They keep you off balance.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you like that song? We're going to fuck with it a lot.
Yeah. And they don't. And they have multiple versions of all of their songs, you know, because even if you look at like footage of them playing songs just a couple of years ago, the songs that they play, you know, which are different than the songs that are on the record, and the songs that the versions of those songs are even different now. Like they're just constantly mixing stuff up. It was really brilliant to watch.
Yeah, I think I said this to my friend, Josh, who I turned on to them and is going to go see them with me. I said to him, it's like they write a song, and the song is pretty simple. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty simple song. And then what they do is they fucking destroy it. You know, like it's got a melody. Mm-hmm. It's got a verse and a chorus. But they're like, yeah, but we're gonna hit that with baseball bats until it's barely recognizable.
Yeah, but it's so specific. Like it's not just a total annihilation of the thing. It's like organized annihilation, you know?
Yes.
I did encourage Andrew Kemp. They played in Southern California, and I did encourage him to go. And his mind was as fucking blown as I expected. Everyone I've told, you gotta go. And people are like, oh, I got a thing. I forgot to buy tickets. And like, you, God damn it, dude. You remember I was talking about when they came last time and I couldn't get anybody to go, and Cheever and Pearl were like, oh, there's a party at a bike shop. And I was like, oh my God, what? And I was like, Lou from Hot Tub Time Machine, like standing in the field yelling, what happened to my friends? You know, it was that sort of situation. But Andrew went and he was just, he's like, as soon as I saw the guy like duct taping a bunch of shit onto his guitar, I knew I was in for a wild ride. And the bands, again, you know, the bands they played with, I was like, ugh, nope.
You know what? Did you speak with them?
No, I didn't.
No.
I did send him a message about, I don't know, 5 or 6 months ago to see if they wanted to, like, what it would take to get them to come play my birthday. And they didn't get back with me. So I sent him another message, but you know, the messages remain unread. I've looked through the website to see if there's a management company or like, you know, I'm about it. I can do it. I put shows on a bunch of times, you know, it's just a matter of like having the finances for it. And if they say, yeah, it's going to be $12,000, and it's probably something I couldn't swing. But if they said, yeah, it's going to be, you know, that'd be $2,500. I could totally pull that off. Probably. Maybe. Right. Yeah. But eating groceries is dumb.
Yeah, it is. I mean, groceries, what are you just going to eat them every day forever?
You just turn food to poop.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
Just going to shit it out again. Why even buy it? Did you prepare a one question interview for them? I'm not asking what the question was, but did you prepare?
No, I didn't. Cause I already interviewed them, you know, on to the next thing.
Oh yeah. Right. Right.
Whatever the next band is. I don't know. Then Schizophonics is playing the night before my surgeries, but I probably should just like stay hidden and quiet. So I already did a one band interview with them. I don't know who the next band is that's coming.
I have so many shows coming up. I have so many. I've got tickets. I got more tickets than actually I know how to like keep track of. And I keep going like, awesome. I don't have money for all this, but I'm just going to keep spending it.
Swami and the Bed of Nails played the next night after 68, but I couldn't figure out how to get back from Seattle because I went down with my friend Susie. So
I've got tickets to see them.
Yeah, that's going to be good.
I've got Teen Mortgage this weekend. I've got 68 coming up. I've got more. Oh, Mets. I have Mets tickets.
Dang.
I just found out. Well, I texted you during the week. I was like, Helmet is coming with Cro-Mags. Would you pay to see them? And you were like, about $10.
Yeah, it'll probably be more than that. That's not fair. I'd pay. I mean, a normal like cheap ticket price is $25 anymore. So I haven't seen Helmet in years, but I love them and I love seeing them live. I haven't seen Cro-Mags, and this is Harley. This is Harley's Cro-Mags, or this is John Joseph's Cro-Mags?
I think it's John Joseph Cro-Mags. I don't keep up with the Cro-Mags. I don't love them. I feel like they have a good record.
Age of Quarrel.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I think I had another shout out, but I forgot what it was. So I'm just going to stick with 68 because they rule.
Was it shout out to me for writing the notes so you could raw dog them in front of the listening public?
Yeah. What is the word that I couldn't pronounce?
Oh, cuidado.
Cuidado. Okay.
Yeah, it says the content warning is Achtung, cuidado. I did not pronounce that correctly. Everyone get off my fucking back.
If you spelled it phonetically, I probably could have figured it out, but I didn't want
well, to if I'm,
embarrass myself more than I usually do.
Well, if I'm honest, I am at this point with all of these things, trying to write things that I think you're going to struggle with.
Appreciate that.
I mean, that is part of the amusement for me.
Right.
All right. Let's do quick music picks so we can get to business.
Okay.
We're so bad at getting to business anymore.
Mm-hmm.
All right. My music pick. I went to see Sleater-Kinney last weekend.
They're fierce.
They are. I'm not a big Sleater-Kinney fan. In the lead up to the show, I was like, I'm going to listen to Sleater-Kinney more because I should know the songs better. And I'm sure that I love them, but I don't actually. I don't love Sleater-Kinney.
I love the first record, I think, is killer. But when I listen to it a lot, it begins to sound like, who's the singer from Rush? Geddy Lee.
Oh, Geddy Lee.
She ends up, I can't think of the woman's name, who the vocalist, but her voice ends up sounding like Geddy Lee to me. And then I have to turn it off for a little while.
Yeah. Corinne Tucker.
Corinne Tucker. Her name. All right.
Yeah. The thing about Sleater-Kinney is they are really good, but they're just maybe not really good for me. Like occasionally I'm like, oh yeah, that song, that was good. But then they don't do anything like that again. I don't know. I'm definitely not knocking them. They put on a great show. They put on a great show. It was a super good show. But I'm picking the band that opened for them. And it's one of these deals where it's a band, but it's actually this woman. The name of the band is Black Belt Eagle Scout. They are from, well, they are based in Portland. She is from the, she is a Native American woman from Northwest Washington. The name of the record is The Land, The Water, The Sky. In listening to it after, first of all, she and they fucking slayed. They were great. It was one of those deals where you're like, what's the opening band going to be? And you're like, oh shit. And it's like this sort of folky, shoegazy rock that has good hooks. It was great live. Afterwards, listening to the studio recordings, okay. I think there's like a rawness and like an emotional energy to her and what she does that maybe doesn't come across on record and is really good live.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to pick this band and this record because it's a real like departure from what I normally pick.
Okay.
And it's also just real good.
I guess she's around this neck of the woods. Like I'll keep my eyes peeled. That sounds great. And to have, to be able to translate the live power to recording is incredibly difficult. I think not being a recording engineer. I don't really know what I'm talking about, but you know, sometimes you listen to stuff, and there was a Jesus Lizard record that I was listening to yesterday. The one with the Malcolm, whoever painting on the cover, the sort of regal sort of bodies with all the royal stuff, and they have cat heads or whatever. Right. That I think Boilermaker is like the first song. It's just like from the jump, it is as explosive as a live performance. And how you capture that? Like I have no clues. You know, sometimes people get it and sometimes people don't. I can't imagine how frustrating it would be to put all this effort into your output, and you know how you know, the weight of what you can do live, and it just somehow kind of falls flat on the recording.
Well, I mean, I don't think the recording necessarily falls flat. It's just different, right? Like, this woman's name, I think it's Catherine Paul is her name. She writes beautiful songs, and she has a beautiful voice. So I could imagine if you were in the studio, you were like, let's make this sound beautiful. But then on stage, she's a shredding guitar player. You add some crunch to it, and all of a sudden, for me anyway, for me, the songs are still beautiful, but they have this like crackling energy that's just missing from the recording. That's okay. All. Like, the songs are still beautiful. If you go and listen to this thing on my recommendation, be prepared for beauty, which is not what I normally steer you toward.
Okay. And I didn't mean her, because I haven't heard it. I don't mean her recording falls flat. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, if, you know, if I'm in a band and I know what I'm capable of live.
Yes.
And then to have it. I'm just talking about the my perceived difficulty of making that translation.
Yeah.
My pick is a band fronted by some friends and acquaintances. Comprised of friends and acquaintances, called The Worship of Silence. And I saw them. The album is called In the Early Hours. And it says that it was released in 2016, but I met them in like 2008 or 9. And it was the first time I had seen Who Rides the Tiger, and they had come to Oakland. So I was excited, because I had a internet relationship with, I guess, Mike, the guy who played bass for Who Rides the Tiger. And they played at a little place called the Stork Club, in Oakland. And so I'm sitting there, and the opening band starts playing, and I was just like, I feel like, and this rarely, if ever, has happened to me. The opening band I know nothing of, and my ears just like perked up, and I was entranced. And it's, there's songs, they're so moody, and they're like kind of soundscapey, but it's a little doomy, but it's a little, I don't know, it really kind of meanders, and you can have, it's sort of a situation where you have like four songs within a 10-minute block. Yeah. Like, the songs are long and big and epic. And I ended up becoming friends with some of the people in the band, and Joe, the vocalist, was a neighbor of mine. And I just, you know, like, every so often I listened to it a lot in my studio at one point, and finished this whole painting listening exclusively to that record, the painting I ended up giving to Joe and his partner. It's just, I think it's a beautiful album, and it's easy to listen to, and it's complex enough that every time I do, I kind of hear something new. Maybe not everybody's cup of tea. I've turned it on to turn some people onto it, and they just feel like it's almost too simple. But you know, they were musicians, and musicians are the worst. So that's my pick, and I love it a lot, and maybe other people will as well. I know they have the guitarist put that album in like a secondary EP or something on a Bandcamp page at some point, so everything's available there.
The band is The Worship of Silence, and the album is
In the Early Hours. It says under quick facts, it says that the album was released in 2016, so I think they might have put the record out right when the drummer moved, or after the drummer moved to New York City, and they just you know, they'd been doing those songs and crafting that album for so long, they were like kind of ready to go, and then the drummer left, and they never really got their feet under him again.
That sucks.
And the guitarist had a sticker on his rig head that said "Louder Than God," which I always really liked. They're great. I don't know.
Check them out or don't. And with that,
let's get a word from the from the sponsor, and we'll be back in just a second.
Revolting is sponsored by Shimano North America and their new 12-speed GRX mechanical group sets. Gravel cycling shouldn't be overly complicated. The heart and soul of cycling's drop bar dirt road discipline is simplicity, inclusivity, and adventure. No ride is out of bounds. All are welcome to join in. Gear should be functional, reliable, and not break the bank. These are the core ideas behind Shimano's 12-speed GRX mechanical groups. Find out more at gravel.shimano.com.
Clap. And we're back. What we got today? The Real House Husbands of whatever zip code this is?
Yeah.
Both of us are homebodies, and at one time or another have been homemakers. Today we're talking about what it means to have and make a home and how that lets us create great works of art and philosophy and impress other people with our clean bathrooms.
I came to visit you in your home, and I was astounded by the cleanliness of your bathroom. I almost wrote my name in poop on the wall just on principle.
I like having a clean space. I mean, for so long I lived in the storefront in Oakland, and it was hard to keep. I mean, it was like living outside basically. I was kind of living in a garage, but I might be a little bit disorganized, you know, like everything doesn't have a place. Right now I'm currently recording in a closet opposite the closet I usually record in, because the people downstairs have like a diesel engine for a bathroom fan. And I noticed that it picked up on the recording last week. So I moved to another closet. My closet's just full of tires and wheels. And I got a 1988 Rock Lobster single speed mountain bike sitting next to me, which is a total nightmare to ride, but it's just such a fucking crazy relic that eventually I got to get it back to Paul, but I was going to write a piece about it. I'm just like, it's just like a gong show of bullshit, like a stack of skateboard decks. Like everything definitely doesn't have its place in my life. However, I know where everything is and it's clean. Like I don't mind clutter so much, but I really don't like dirt.
No, I'm the same way. I clean, like my kitchen is pretty... It's cluttery, but it's spotless also. Mm-hmm. Like there's a bunch of shit, but actually the other thing that I do, which is a little nuts, is I have too much stuff, but it's arranged. I have arranged the stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I think kind of like in my former situation, my shit show was sort of in my space. Like, you know, I had like my shop and my studio and that was all, that was where the sort of chaos lived. And in my shared space, everything was very well arranged. And, you know, when you live with, well, I mean, in this situation, she was the only partner I'd ever lived with. She has a very clean and sort of pretty aesthetic, you know. Mm. If I had been left to my own devices, I don't think I wouldn't have put it together as well as she did. But I guess I kind of was left to my own devices in this situation, and it's okay. You know, it's nice. She helped me move here and she helped me put stuff together. So I don't, even if it, I don't know what it would be like if I had like put this together on my own, would I just be living in a big empty place still, you know?
Well, I don't know. The counterexample is your studio, which you put together on your own, which is clean and tidy and homey and warm.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I did a good job with that, didn't I?
I mean, my point, and this kind of comes...
Maybe I got it after all.
I think you do. I this sort of comes from the idea that I came upon late in life. I had this whole... I don't know if it was a nervous breakdown, but I had this sort of like burnout, give up moment, like right around the beginning of the pandemic, because I'd been working just a ton and my dad died. And well, like I had all this shit happen to me all at the same time. And so I was like, all right, time the fuck out. I'm not going to work for a little bit. I'm going to like, I just got a reset. Mm-hmm. And it was, I realized like, oh, actually, I like being the homemaker. I like doing the grocery shopping. I like cleaning the kitchen. I like making dinner at night. Like I, that's a role I really like. I didn't realize that this was, this was a thing for me, but also that it was on offer. And then I just sort of, the way our lives worked out, I was like, okay, well, this is going to be my role now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, having like a, having a safe, clean, functional space is great. And I guess I lived in chaos or some degree of chaos or another for so long that, I don't know, maybe it's just a facet of maturing or, you know, having like, having, I mean, I knew people who had like disassembled motorcycles in their living room and shit. And you walk in and you're like, man, that's just, you know, it's just another place to put a beer.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe I've gotten to a point where definitely, visual cleanliness is kind of paramount to my mental health. You know, if there are stacks of stuff, stacks of paper that need to be dealt with or bills or like, I, you know, that when I get to a point where I just can't find anything or I can't, I don't know exactly where everything is. I don't know. It's just, it's sort of like the landscape of what you see in front of you. If that is sort of put together to the best of, you know, to your needs, there's a weight just kind of off of my shoulders, I think. I don't know. I used to get on people when I was a managed the service department at a bike shop in Berkeley, and I encouraged the mechanics who worked for me. And I did this at Santa Cruz Bikes too, I think, to a degree when I was the assembly manager, just to like every five bikes or every four bikes or whatever, put all of the small parts back where they belong, hang all your tools back on the wall, like clear your workspace and then start over again. And it's a, for me, it just is, it was a kind of a necessary reset. And that extends to my living situation where I'd say like, okay, fuck, one big deep clean. I put everything back where it's supposed to go. And it's wild because I'm only one person here. And somehow, why don't I just hang my jacket back up in the closet, you know? And then before too long, there's like 3 days and there's shit all over the place again. So
I have to do, I mean, read into this what you will, but like every day my wife and my goes to work, my kid goes to school, and then I do a reset. I like reset the kitchen. I reset the living room and I work. My office is like part of the living room. But I kind of, I feel like I got to do that in order to then make ideas come out of my brain.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. You, I mean, it's, I think that's kind of like, it's like a, an age old trope of the writer. Like, okay, you put the piece of paper in the typewriter, you stack the stack of paper, you organize the stack of paper, you like sharpen all your pens and pencils, you do all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And then you crack your knuckles and you begin. You know, having that degree of organization where everything is like, okay, you're, I can't even think of like a proper analogy. Like your palate is clean and you can start, you can start again. And I like that feeling a lot.
Yeah. I mean, if I was, you know, to your point, if I was going to work on bikes down in the basement and my, and the place was a mess, I would go in and clean up before I started to work.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just how I'm wired. You know, I don't expect everybody to work that, operate that way, but that feels really good to me.
The other piece of it, the other piece of it for me is taking care of the house to me feels like taking care of the people who live here.
Yeah.
You know, like I like the idea that when my wife comes home, the kitchen is clean, but also dinner is being made. But like the garbage is already out at the curb. The bed is made.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, like all of these little things are like ways I express my care for the people who live here.
Sure. Yourself included, right? Like.
Yeah.
that's
well, I mean, the part of me is the part we were talking about before, where I can't, like, my ADD spins off into infinity if I don't have my shit straight.
Sure, but I mean, you're talking about doing it because you care about the people who live there, and it's not just for your own functionality, but it's because your own that's another way of expressing self-love, you know. When my ex came to visit in October, she was like, "Oh man, this place looks really, really nice." I'm like, "Oh, did you maybe forget that I know how to keep a house?" I'm good at this. And it's necessary for, you know, if I didn't love myself, it's just an extension of that. You're doing it because you're taking care of the people who live there, yourself included. I guess that's the end of that sentence.
Well, the other piece of it that I've been thinking about, and I was out with my friend Magda this morning. She was kicking my ass in the woods, which is a thing that we do. We go to the woods so she can kick my ass. But we were talking about she grew up partly in Lagos, Nigeria, and partly in Bangalore with her grandmother. And she was talking about this morning about how I mentioned what we were going to talk about on the show. And she said, "Oh, you know, when I lived with my grandmother, who, you know, she loved dearly, she's like, all of my grand, like every day my grandmother would say, it is your, all you have to do as a woman is take care of this cooking and this cleaning. Like, this is going to be your role." And the whole time, though she loved her grandmother, she was like, "You don't understand who I am at all. Like, this is not what I'm going to be doing with my time," which is cool. Like, I don't think it's everybody's role to be homemaker. Like, it's in you or it's not in you. I discovered, you know, laterally that it was in me.
Mm-hmm.
But when I visited you and when I see pictures of your studio, I'm like, no, he's got it also.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think losing my home gave me a massive reset because I don't have room for any of my stuff. And my stuff, I'm always kind of at conflict because I want as little as possible, yet I'm constantly generating stuff. Like, I make stuff. And now I need room to store the stuff that I made. And I really struggled when I moved. Like, I had, you know, 30 years of artwork, paintings, and all kinds of stuff that I made. And I have no idea where most of that is. I'm pretty sure just because I was under duress for a year and a half, I probably threw away 25 years worth of work, you know, and that breaks my heart. But where am I going to put it? You know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I'm basically like, am I relegated to just living halfway for the rest of my life now that, like, I don't have the idea of a forever home and a forever person. And with that is security, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't have security. And now I'm just like, well, what, I guess, I don't know. Just I don't even know what I'm trying to describe, but it inspires this degree of uncertainty and impermanence. Yes. And with that impermanence, you just are kind of like, what the fucking it all the time. But I try to manage some organization and I try to manage some cleanliness, even though I have no ownership of.
Well, it's interesting. Like in the time that we've been doing this, where you and I've gotten to know each other better and better and better, I think like when we first started, you were fucking nowhere. And I'm seeing like a process of like you rebuilding your life, you reinvesting in taking care of yourself. Even like getting the studio was a step in that direction.
Yeah. I mean, I would have done that from the jump if I had the resources, but.
Right. You know. But I mean, you're finding your way. And as you find your way, you do make a home for yourself. You are doing it.
I guess I thought that it would happen more quickly. And I'm also like, I'm pretty fatalistic. you know, and they say like, well, I guess this is how it is going to be forever, because that's right. how it is now. And my forever changed so dramatically that I guess this is my new reality. But your reality isn't your forever reality. Like, that's the thing that I need to constantly remind myself of. But we're way off the rails on this. So, but we can. What, if anything, are you missing from your current living situation? I'm going to tell you that I would assume you what's missing is an entity, a four-legged something.
Well, we've been dog sitting all week, and wow, like the ability to like tippy tap at my keyboard for a couple hours and then hug a dog.
Oh, it's that's so great.
It is pretty great.
Sharing your space with an animal. I just think it brings some vivaciousness. There's just this energy, this fucking beauty that exists in a home with an animal that it's plants can't fill that role.
No, I'm aware that like I'm constantly trying to figure out what the dog is thinking. But what makes the relationship work is that I think the dog is constantly trying to figure out what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're both really working on it. We're never going to know. Neither of us is ever going to get it. But just in the effort to understand each other, there's a beautiful relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess that's probably what we would say is missing from both of our current living situations.
The other thing that's missing from my current living situation is some fucking peace and quiet. Like, even now as we're talking, I don't know if people can hear it. I'm going to open the thing so I can see. Oh, yeah. The neighbor has a box truck in his driveway where they seem to be just throwing metal around inside the box truck. Oh, yeah. Just throw that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a trash hauling service. So the whole podcast is going to be replete with them hucking things into the back of a truck.
We might really need to invest in I'm going to get I'm going to get a storage space. I need a padded cell to do this in.
Maybe I'll buy an old, like a small shipping container, and I'll just have it spray foam insulated.
Yeah.
And then I'll just go in there.
I was reading about the quietest room in the world yesterday. It's at Microsoft or something, and it's like I guess it'll make you go crazy. You can hear your joints creak, and you can hear your heart beat and your lungs expand, and it's like insulated on top of insulated on top of insulated, and if you stay in there for more than like 25 minutes, you go totally insane. I'm down to give it a crack though. I would also like a love seat. Like some kind of a sofa, like in the event that anyone ever comes here.
Yeah.
I always just sit on the floor and they get the chair. Maybe having something like for people to sit on might be nice.
Yeah. I mean, dare to dream.
Was there a point in your life when you realized you preferred to be the one staying home, taking care of the home? I mean, I've been doing the All Hail the Black Market. I've been doing it. It'll be 15 years this summer. And so I've always worked from home. And, you know, at some point my ex was like, maybe you should, you know, get a secondary job just so you like interact with other people and know what day it is and stuff like that. And I'm like, I guess I could do that, you know, I ended up doing. And then once that happened, she told me to beat it. that was great. But, I don't really give a shit to know what day it is. And I interact with the people I want to interact with. And a job doesn't really provide that necessarily. I mean, once I was working from home all the time, I would handle my business up until midday. And then I would clean the house and I would buy flowers and I would do all, you know, get groceries and do all of that shit. And and then I would go on a ride or I'd go skateboarding or I'd go goof around or whatever and, you know, see friends or go out, see a band or I don't know. It's just like it was a great schedule to keep for me.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I think I think when I have to do the same thing too much, I grow to hate that thing. So it's better to have to do a whole bunch of different things.
Amen. Yeah, absolutely. Variety is the spice of life, as they say.
Someone says that.
I like staying home. If it's a home that I like being in, you know, I'm not crazy about being here. So I keep it clean and I put it together and I prepare all the stuff and make sure I have food in the refrigerator. And then, you know, since I've had my studio and since I've been working on this current project, I just go there and I'm there all the time.
Yeah. It seems like you really like that space.
I do. And I'm very proud of what I've accomplished there in not so many months. But it is, it's a real comfortable space and I have real comfortable energy there. And I'm like a downtown resident now, you know, like, people around, if they see me just kind of shuffling around and I know people at restaurants and coffee shops. And of course, like I've said, the bar that I work in is actually 52 walking steps. It's 52 steps from my door to the door of the bar. And I have a key to the bar and I go in there and Kay is the partner of the fella who owns it. And she is like, I called her the derelict's Mrs. Garrison. Wait, no. What was the woman on Facts of Life? Mrs. Garrison?
I think that's right.
Yeah, I called her the derelict's Mrs. Garrison because she just makes sure that everyone is happy and she's really gregarious and she's so sweet and she, you know, but just she is like committed to everyone's well-being and I love the people I work with and I love the people I work for. And, you know, I just have like a ready-made gang of friends upstairs all the time. It's really fun. So I kind of almost prefer to be down there more than I'm here.
Yeah, I get that.
Staying home, so would you rather?
Oh, yeah, would you?
Would you rather slam your pinky in a heavy car door or have a bucket full of maggots dumped on your head? I actually slammed my left ring finger, like my nail, like the tip, sideways, not smushy nail to fingertip, but side to side. I closed that in the door in a door the other day. And I had to have a real come to Jesus meeting with myself and to not yell all of the expletives. There were children around and I just sat there and took it. Holy shit. That fucking hurt though. You could potentially lose your finger in a heavy car door. So I'm going to take the maggots because they'll just fall. Are they clean maggots? Like the kind they put on wounds for, you know, healing? Or are these like scraped right off of a dead horse?
I don't know. I don't think I had qualified in my mind what kind of maggots they were.
Medical grade maggots? Or
yeah. How clean are those maggots? Is that an actual question? Are those words? Has anyone ever said how clean are these maggots?
They do.
You might be a pioneer.
They do medical treatment with maggots. If you have like a gangrenous wound, they will wrap maggots up on the wound and the maggots eat all of the decayed flesh. And they take it off and you have a healthy wound that will heal naturally on its own. This is a thing that happens.
I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
I'll take medical maggots. I'm going to probably eat some of them on the way over me, but I would like if it's dumpster maggots, I'd still take dumpster maggots. I hate slamming my shit in doors.
I do too. Well, let me tell you where this all came from. So I was at Suffer Club this week. We just restarted Suffer Club on Tuesday. And two of the women, there's Kimberly the Angry Mormon and Margie the Angry Canadian. And they had both broken their toe over the winter. And I was like, oh, Kimberly, how did you break your toe? She's like, I dropped. Now, Kimberly is like 6'2". She's like a world-class rower.
Oh, heavens.
She is for serious. She would never cop to that. I hope she's listening and cringing right now, but...
Is she Scandinavian by chance? Is she like Viking, got Viking blood in her?
Probably. She's also, and again, I hope she's listening. She's also a shitty Mormon. She's shitty at Mormoning. She knows it. So she's like, I dropped a weight plate. I was at the gym and I dropped a weight plate on my toe. And I was like, Oh, that is some exquisite bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And then Margie was like, I just walked straight into a platform bed. I assume that the bed started where the mattress ended, but actually it started like 5 inches further out, and I just walked full tilt into it. So then I was like, well, you guys just wrote the would you rather for the week. Would you rather break your toe by dropping a plate on it? But then I was like, but those are that's like choosing between two of pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
That's where we got these maggots from.
I am so hyper paranoid about my mom kicked. Holy shit, man. This has just been a saga. But years ago, my mom kicked a bed frame, broke her pinky toe, like shattered it basically. So they had to put a pin in it and to pin the bone to the metatarsal. The pin broke. They had like, it just like went from one thing to the next thing to the next thing. And then her gait got all fucked up, and then her knees got fucked up, and then her hips got fucked up. And it's just like, it's been, I mean, it started with a broken toe, and I broke when I was on crutches the last time I had my ACL repaired. I kicked the crutch, I think, with my left foot. So my right knee was the one that had been operated on. I kicked a crutch with my left foot and broke my second and third toes on my left foot while I'm like totally hobbling around on crutches. And I was just like, this can't get any worse. I mean, always can get worse. Anyway, I do not.
But if you were a horse, they'd have been like,
immediately. Enough. Yeah. I don't fuck with broken toes. I need my hands. I'm like really paranoid about my hands too. I high five with them, you know, and that's important.
That's important. Yeah. I hear all this, but what's the problem is that I drastically underestimated your affection for maggots.
I just know some stuff about maggots. Maggots are great.
All right.
I would rather have like daily maggot treatment than to break digits. For sure.
Yeah. Upon reflection, I would go with maggots too, and I'm just disappointed that we both see it that way.
It would give me the heebie-jeebies big time, but I'm way better with heebie-jeebies than I am with nagging, relentless, constant, and maybe long-term injury.
Yeah.
Okay.
How many days do you not sleep, though, after the maggots?
I mean, as long as they don't, like, you don't end up with them, like, crawling around in your ears or whatever.
Well, but,
or do
you know, that's me. Take a shower, right? And then I'm, like, going to bed. I'm like, but what if one's in my ear?
Tapping your head to make sure that no creepy crawlers.
Yeah. Is anyone ever going to notice? Anyway.
Okay, that was, what are we at? Hour 7. Nice work. Here's your outro. What you got to ask yourself is, are you better off than you were just one short hour and 7 minutes ago? The answer is probably not, but that's not going to stop us from asking you for money. Like every fucking week. Hey, I just did a little jig. Can I have a quarter? Hit the tip jar at the Cycling Independent so we can go on wasting your time with fart jokes and half-baked opinions about bands you never heard of. On behalf of the Cycling Independent and Revolting, thank you for listening. I'm Steve-O.
I'm Robot.
Suck it.